A diamond has long been a symbol of commitment, love, and trust. Isn't it time the diamond industry showed us the same values behind the scenes? Clean Origin is leading the engagement ring industry toward a brighter future, designing elegant lab-grown diamond fine jewelry that never compromises our values. A brand that doesn't just talk the talk, but one that was founded to make a difference, to offer a more environmentally friendly, conflict-free, and price-accessible choice without any compromises on quality.
Lab diamonds are grown in a lab using cutting-edge technology that replicates the process of natural diamonds. A lab-grown diamond is chemically, physically, and visually identical to a mined diamond without the adverse effects of traditional diamond mining. And for a price of up to 10 times less, we don't know why you'd choose anything else.
You know, I'm a Sag. I'm always going to say bigger is better. And with these prices, 3 carats is the new 1 carat, baby. Go big. Honestly, 5 carats is the new 3 carats if you really want to go there.
You all know that we know a thing or two about engagement rings, and these Clean Origin rings are simply stunning, classic designs, and for a fraction of the price. From the color of your metal to the center stone and setting, you'll be able to customize every aspect of this very important lifetime piece of jewelry. Whether you're looking for an engagement ring or tennis bracelet or diamond stud earrings, Clean Origin has beautiful diamond jewelry that you'll be wearing forever.
You can use code What's Your Sign for $100 off all orders over $1,000. That's $100 off all orders over $1,000.
Go to cleanorigin.com and use our code What's Your Sign at checkout for $100 off of your order of $1,000 or more.
Use our promo code What's Your Sign, all spelled out. Check out Clean Origin today.
Welcome to What's Your Sign? I'm Julia Loken.
I'm Stevie Anderson.
I'm Lisa Chanew.
And today we are joined by a very special guest, a Los Angeles-based multimedia journalist specializing in arts and culture, civil rights, crime, and human interest stories. You may have seen her work on Vice News Tonight, Marketplace. She's produced 2 series for the podcast network Wondery. I mean, all over the place. It's Cerise Castle.
Hi, thanks for the lovely introduction.
Of course. I try. I always get very nervous with introductions, even just like not just like people's credits, but I feel like I'm the most awkward at saying hi and goodbye to people. So I always really have to like gas myself up for it.
I was going to say, Julie, that was a really good credit roll. I was even impressed by this. Well, Cerise, you have we're so excited to talk to you because there's so much juice and dirt and like all this stuff afoot. And I know that there's a lot of, for our listeners, you know, writers themselves, journalists themselves, people that are just like politically interested as well. So I think you're just the coolest, and also in good company with all of us. Me and Lisa are Tauruses as well. You share actually sun and moon with Lisa. So, you know, we're back in the bullpen, baby. Just get it yet again.
We don't do it on purpose. We swear. It just happens that it's like, you know, we got a lot of Tauruses. I mean,
all the cool people I think are Tauruses. And so that's why it's really tough, because it's like, we want to have cool people on, but we can't like just only have one sign on every week. So
the Tauruses just come through.
I know that you've tweeted some astrology things. Are you a astrology person?
I am huge into astrology. I check my Chani app before I leave my bed every morning.
Right. Whoa, okay. How are you? Because the Chani app's pretty new. How are we liking the Chani app for those who are maybe curious about it at home?
I love the Chani app. I went ahead and I paid for the monthly subscription and I got like a weekly meditation from Chani. I get updates every day about how my planets are doing and where they're headed next. I love it. I feel very tuned in with my chart in a way that I never have before.
Oh, okay. Also, Chani, that wasn't a sponsored ad, y'all. That was just some real life testimonial right here. You know, we love Chani, so good to hear. Is there parts of your chart that have like surprised you? I think we all like learn our sun sign first, right? Like that's typically the mode of transpo. But yeah, is what in your chart has anything hit for you differently that maybe was surprising?
I don't know if it's hitting differently, but I feel like I'm more in tune with my Cancer moon these days. Mm-hmm. Being locked up in the house has put me very in touch with my emotional side. and I feel like I'm getting more in tune with the moon, more accepting of my moon, more okay with, you know, just being more emotional and being okay with it.
Mm-hmm. I think that's super important in journalism is having that kind of, because, you know, we're comedians and if there is, I also have a Cancer moon and it's just one of those things that I think as women, when we get success, especially in a difficult field, like it is really hard to nurture yourself because there you have a lot of other voices that are telling you certain things about yourself. And so I think it's such an important thing to find those things that really feel like I'm taken care of today, or like, because a lot of people in your life are going to tell you, I'm taking care of you, and they really aren't.
Mm-hmm. Very true.
Well, and so much, it's like you are your work, even though you are, you know, observing and investigating and studying other people too, you still have to be kind of like the vessel that translates these things. And so it is important to be staying in tune with what you need and your emotions and how that's affecting you, because I think it just helps you be a better like creator, whatever that means for any, whatever line of work you're in. If you are needing to put kind of like yourself into your work, which I believe that you do, then you gotta like be aware of what's going on with you, because it'll get out, you know. But also I think it's interesting, this like Cancer energy. I'm a Cancer midheaven, and I, you know, I've had a long storied relationship with Cancer energy. I feel like since the beginning of this podcast, that's the one I really came in hot, like fuck Cancers, which just like anything, I have a Capricorn moon, so it's the opposite. So it's like, yeah, you don't, of course you're going to be all shitty like that. Like it's usually, there's an answer for it in your own, you know, projection. But someone told me that Cancer energy is so much about like making your home wherever you are and feeling home wherever you are. And I can also imagine, you know, obviously right, like during the pandemic, you're literally home and having to kind of be with yourself. But also I could see where that would be, that like knowing could be really useful. If you're having to put yourself in kind of difficult, confrontational, dangerous situations too, of really needing to have that, like personal sense of home and security and safety, and knowing that you have at the very least that to kind of come to yourself when you don't have that in the world.
Oh yeah, 100%. And I think like when you were talking about like knowing how to take care of yourself when there are a lot of external like stress factors, like definitely with this project that I'm working on now, I've never been so stressed in my life. I've spent like 6 months working on this, and it's taking on a lot of pain, like you said, taking on a lot of trauma, and it can be very difficult and it does get overwhelming sometimes. But again, it's just like all about like being in tune with yourself and knowing like how to take care of yourself and manage that. And I'm very grateful for that knowledge that I've gained.
Mm-hmm. I think too, with your work, it's like all based in, not, I guess not all, but like it's based in morality. You know that what you're doing is right, so you will continue to walk in that direction because you have that, like, I guess that like safe, that not safety, but there's some bravery to it. But it's like this idea of coming back to you, like, well, why am I, why did I start this, I guess. And that mm-hmm. can help you to walk forward.
Ooh. Yeah. Can we, I think this will be out when your piece is out, but can we kind of talk about like, what you've been deeply involved in?
Of course. Of course. So I've spent the past 6 months digging into gangs in the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department. These are deputies that form their own gangs, and they go out and they commit crimes. They have been engaged in murder, torture, fraud, extortion, really you name it, and they've done it. And they've been able to do this with impunity for at least the past 30 years. My records go back all the way to the mid-1980s. This has been going on. And what's really blown my mind about this research is that everybody knew about it. I'm talking about mm-hmm. the district attorney, the county board of supervisors, the state senate in California, and even the U.S. Civil Rights Commission have all heard testimony about the gangs in Los Angeles County. They heard about this in the early 90s. So they've known about this since before I was born. And yet the gangs have been allowed to grow and to really gain control of the sheriff's department.
Yeah.
This is something I saw somewhere. Maybe you can't comment, but there's like a tattoo, right?
There are many tattoos. So I've been able to uncover 18 different gangs. Let me rephrase that. I've been able to uncover solid evidence on 18 different gangs within the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department. I suspect that there are quite a bit more that I haven't heard of. And each of these gangs, they use different hand signs to flash gang signs with each other. They have different tattoos with different placement. Depending on the tattoo, sometimes there are embellishments added. If you've been involved in a shooting, if you've killed someone, your tattoo gets embellished a little bit. Yes.
Damn. I mean, fuck, that's some heavy ass shit. Yeah. That is like, it's, there's, I, and I want to like, you know, discuss this with Grace, because I think we all live in LA. You know, Julia's from the area. I think this past summer obviously was a big awakening for a lot of people who maybe weren't as civically engaged. And I remember, I think with the LA Sheriff's Department with Andres Guardado, I think that was like the big, and maybe, and please correct me, like, if I think that was like a big awakening of the gang involvement of the sheriff's department for a lot of the citizens. Is that a fair link, or is that just one drop in the bucket, I'm guessing?
No, I think that Andres's death like really woke up a lot of people in LA. Mm-hmm. I mean, growing up here, I grew up here too. You know, everyone always just kind of tells you the biggest gang in LA County is the sheriff's department. That's just kind of something that I grew up hearing. I had heard from elders about the Vikings as a child, and just sort of some like, what's the word I'm looking for?
It's like an open secret, it sounds like.
Yeah.
Like it was just like one of those things, like you always, like it's, you just almost know that.
Like, right.
Like, folklore or whatever, like
oh yeah. You know, they're just a gang, like I mean, yeah. I spent most of my time in Chicago, so like very aware of like this is beyond an LA issue, but I'm glad we can spotlight the city that we're all residing in and hyper focus. But yeah, that idea of like, yeah, cops are gang members allegedly .com.
Well, I think too, I think there's something where you're right that it is kind of like a open secret, or like something that people kind of just discuss as like a foregone conclusion. But I do think recently it's been really clear. I mean, obviously, based on your research, how kind of far up and far reaching this knowledge goes, that it's not. I think there's some, when we have those kinds of things where it just feels like a, almost like, not to say it's not as serious, but it's like, oh, well, if the people know, it must just be kind of like a people problem, not a far-reaching legal problem or something like that. Like it's more, I don't know. I guess there's some naivete of like, well, if this was really, not to say a real problem, but I think just because it's like Los Angeles, you know, we talk about it being this liberal bubble. And so you just mm-hmm. don't like to think that this, that these same things are happening in your, like, you know, liberal city, when in fact, I think that it's even more, you know, we're seeing this a little, not the exact same thing, but I think a lot of what the past 4 years and certainly in the pandemic has been is that it's like we need to be just as vigilant in like liberal, quote, capital L liberal circles as anywhere else, because it's also been, we've also allowed for so much of this stuff to persist and to hold everyone accountable and to not be like, oh, this isn't a like, this isn't just a sheriff problem. This is a like far a huge problem. I don't even know how to quantify where, what kind of contextual like space that holds. It's everything.
Well, I think too, for me, I'm not a native Angeleno, and I have recently become more involved with local, not involved, but just like interested in reading and learning about like local history and local politics and stuff, mostly because my boyfriend's lived here for a very long time. And I live close to PD. I guess I maybe shouldn't say that, but okay. I live nearby, which is like a notorious police department. And I think for me, I've compartmentalized that a lot in my life in the past, you know, 5 years that I've lived in this neighborhood, that that was in the past, or that, and I think a lot of people do that because it's scary to walk around your neighborhood and think that it might not be safe, and the people that might be supposed to be protecting it are the ones maybe making it less safe. And so I think that, and I know that that, I don't know too much about that division. I know there's a movie and I you know, whatever, but
you killed,
I know
that things have,
what
I said, they killed your favorite rapper.
Oh, right. Well, of course that I know that stuff, but like, I don't, I know they've rebranded and all that kind of stuff. So I don't know like what goes on there today. I see the cars come out or whatever. I know kind of what's there, but you can't, it's not a police department you can walk into and, you know, file any kind of report or whatever. So, and I think it's like some gang task force or something, but it is just like, I think we compartmentalize things and we think that a lot of this stuff was happening in the 90s and blah, blah, blah. And like, I don't think that ever got solved. So it has just been continuing to happen.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. You know, and an interesting thing about, you know, we're talking about the 90s, and I think everyone really, like, when we think about the 90s in LA, we think about gang culture, right? That was when, like, gangs were really at a height here. And I think, like, that's something unique to Los Angeles. I mean, in Chicago, I know they have a lot of gangs and cliques, too. But, you know, the gang culture in LA is just, like, so, so entrenched. And I don't think that's a negative thing, necessarily. Like, I have friends that are in street gangs, and, you know, it can be like a nice like community organization. But again, I think it just says something about the culture, like the bandanas that we have here in LA, the dancing that we do here in LA, it's all based around gangs. So it doesn't really surprise me that the sheriff's department took on this identity, especially when you're working in a place like law enforcement and you have this us versus them mentality. It really allows that stuff to grow and fester. And, you know, another thing that I think about a lot, one of the private investigators that I spoke to in the course of this research, she's actually a Marine Corps veteran who served in Vietnam. And he has a lot of really interesting insight about the atrocious acts that he committed in Vietnam and comparing that with the sheriff's department. He says, like, you know, in Vietnam, we were going into a place that we didn't know, fighting people who didn't look like us, who had a completely different culture. It was very easy for us to be brainwashed into that their lives didn't matter, and that what we were doing was noble and just, and that these people were disposable. And it's really the same thing with the sheriff's department, right? Many of these people don't live in the communities that they're patrolling.
Right.
They don't look like the people that they're patrolling. They don't share a culture or a common identity. And, you know, in my opinion, I truly do think that they treat these lives as disposable. And we do live in this quote unquote, like, liberal playground. But, you know, a lot of those policies that are upheld by liberal Democratic voters have kept the sheriff's department gangs in power and allowed them to continue to grow and to get into these upper levels of management. Alex Villanueva, our current sheriff, he mm-hmm. said in a board of supervisors meeting in 2019 that during his time at the East Los Angeles station, which is notorious for being home to not just one, but three different gangs, he said in a board of supervisors meeting, "We were all cavemen," saying that we were all a part of this gang. So this stuff is so deep. You know, I truly I truly believe that, unfortunately, most deputies in the sheriff's department, if they aren't a tattooed member of the gang, that they are affiliated with a gang, that they are associated with a gang. Because in my research, people that aren't, they get pushed out. They just aren't able to work anymore. They get chased away.
This brings up an interesting point, and we don't have to answer this question I'm going to propose, but it's one we get not a lot, because I think a lot of our listeners are typically progressive, liberal-minded, whatever that means. But sometimes we, and this is the argument I think we hear from a lot of people, is like, well, it's not everyone. It's not all these cops. It's not all these people. They're, it's just the system. I don't even know if there's like, I don't even know if I'm posing a question, like, but more of like, what do we say to stuff like that? Like, what do we say to when someone's like, well, my husband is a good cop or a good sheriff. And it's like, well,
you probably don't know your husband. 46% of cops beat their wives. Like, are you being hurt right now? That would be my response to that woman.
Are you okay?
Mm-hmm. You know, I think the system is built to preserve this type of behavior. I mean, we all know that police were founded as, you know, the slave patrol to capture mm-hmm. runaway slaves. And I don't think that attitude has changed. It's been set up to, the police system in America is set up to protect capitalistic property, and they're not for us. I mean, sure. Right. I think that, like, potentially there could be a few so-called good cops in the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department. But, you know, even if they're there, they don't have a recourse to make things better. They're outnumbered by all of the bad cops. And if they try to do anything, if they try to speak up and say, hey, you know what, like, I don't like this. I know of at least 7 cops at the East Los Angeles station who wrote letters to the board of supervisors saying, hey, we need help. They actually said, we want a consent decree. We want the FBI to come in here. The Department of Justice to come in here and fix things, because things are so bad. We are being outnumbered by good cops, by bad cops rather, and we good cops can't do our job. And nothing was done. It's just these people, and they're forced to quit the department because their lives get threatened. They have people doing drive-bys on their houses. They have people sending dead animals in the mail to them. So
it's just like classic mafia.
I don't think the system can be repaired.
Well, that's like mafia shit.
I can understand where someone is coming from, saying, you know, I think it just is like, well, you could be, it doesn't matter at a certain point. It doesn't matter what your intentions are. If you are in a system that isn't supporting your intentions, then who cares about a good actor? Like, that's it. You are only as powerful as the system that upholds you. And if you have to, the concessions that people have to make to be successful in these policing systems usually make them kind of bad. And it's like, if the system itself is bad, who cares if you got into it for the right reasons? Or if you genuinely want to help people, you have to do all of these other things that aren't helpful. Like, and if people
I don't want to bring this up from like an individualism standpoint, but I think that is the question we get asked a lot when we do bring up our opinions on defunding the police and things like that, like very few and far between. But I think that does come up a lot of the times. And I think that's a question we all need to be prepared to answer in a lot of ways, too, of like, well, I know something is good here, or this person can't possibly be affiliated with the bad. And it's like, no, they are, like, they actually are. They are part of something that needs to be dismantled and fully renovated.
we're so obsessed as a culture with like innocence of like someone can be innocent on one end and not ever be involved with something that's bad, or like if you mm-hmm. if you didn't mean to, then you can't possibly be held responsible for the other mm-hmm. like the further reaching consequences of your choices. And it's like, no, there's nobody like once you get rid of that, then you can actually change things, because it's like you could have, again, you could have had good intentions when you wanted to become a police officer or a sheriff or whatever. You could have wanted to do change in it. You had it in your head that this was the way to do that. But once you figure out that that is not the way to do that, like fucking change.
Then
like,
what?
You have to change. Like you can still want to, if you are insistent on maintaining that system, then you don't actually want to do good. You want to uphold a system. If you're mm-hmm. actually interested in doing good, then you should see when someone's presenting you, oh, this actually doesn't help, then stop doing that thing. Stop trying to like give someone medicine they don't need. Stop trying to like, you know what I mean? Like if someone says they're not hungry, stop feeding them like that. You can't
quit your jobs, fool.
Well, yeah. Or just admit that you, I don't know. I know that's hard. And obviously it's like so ingrained in our society. And there's so many, like you said, so many people are culpable like that. It's, which is so sad and scary. And, you know, this is maybe again, too big of a question, but was there something particular besides, you know, everybody knowing, was there anything that surprised you more than something else, or like something that you feel like is the thing that people should really like take away the most? I mean, obviously read the whole piece. Everything is going to be, and I think that'll be like different for people, but just if there was something that stood out to you, or maybe let's back up and say was there a particular thing that started this investigation, like more than something else? Obviously this is an ongoing problem and mm-hmm. something that I'm sure you've considered, you know, throughout time, but was there something that was like, this is the moment, I got to do this now?
Oh, gosh. Well, you know, something about me, I've always wanted to read like I always heard about gangs in the sheriff's department growing up. And learning about them, I really wanted to research them. I'm a big nerd. I love reading like history books or, just like, I don't know. I love like a good like history book to like sink mm-hmm. my teeth into. Like I read a lot of Mike Davis, Howard Zinn. So I was looking for some kind of like comprehensive history on the sheriff's department and gangs within it. And it didn't exist. I started looking for that, God, probably like 12 years ago, for something like that. And it didn't exist. And, you know, I sort of like went on about my life, and over the summer, things were like particularly horrible. Mm-hmm. There were protests. I got shot with a rubber bullet while covering said protests. So then I was like forced to spend a lot of time in my house. I was doing that anyway because of COVID.
Are you okay? Are you okay?
Yeah, are you okay?
I'm okay now, but I couldn't walk for like 6 months.
Holy shit.
That sucked.
Sorry to hear that.
Thank you. I'm glad I'm better now. So I spent a lot of time just like, you know, being a nerd online, reading history. And Andres Guardado was killed. And that, like you said, that sort of like brought the gangs back into the mainstream. And I mm-hmm. kept that question in my mind, kept popping up again. Like, why hasn't anyone done a comprehensive history? Why hasn't anyone really dug into this? And you know, I think that says a lot about our local media, or local mm-hmm. big media, that nothing like this was done. I don't know why.
I
think it's a great story.
I have a few guesses
why.
Yeah, a few guesses.
And their names are, you know, my son, my daughter, and you know, whatever else, like who they go to school with, or you know, it's mm-hmm. it's scary for people. It's dangerous. It takes a lot of bravery. And that is to say, not to put those people down that are in those positions in big media, but to give you
credit,
because that is, it's a lot of, it's dangerous. It's scary.
Well, it makes sense looking at your chart, too, I think, you know, right away that stood out to me. You have this gorgeous grand shrine of like, well, not technically grand, but I'm just looking, I'm like re-looking, but I
well, it's like that 29 degree Mars that you're looking at, right? Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. With the well, I'm like, it's out of sign, but by degree, but you've got this Aries, Mercury, which is like so much of like, oh, it does it to me. That's so much like it didn't exist. So I'm going to be the one to do that, kind of taking it upon yourself to take care of that. But also because it's trine with Mars, which is like values meets action meets Pluto, transformation and uncovering. And, you know, you have this Pluto in the third house, which is so much about, I feel like, bringing information to light and writing things that are transformative, writing things that are powerful and that can
difficult,
like, difficult and can rebirth, but also destroy. Like this, you have the power to destroy things. I think the correct things, obviously.
Very, very, very sick.
But no, it's in your right, yeah, in the right direction. Try not to do it to yourself is the note.
Yes, but these ideas, and I think you have just these interesting things of kind of power struggle within your chart of these ideas of kind of understanding both sides and where we meet in that center place. It's just, it makes so much sense looking at your chart that you would choose to do this kind of work and that you would take that on and not only be interested in it, but also be the person to kind of birth this and bring it to light.
I also want to talk, I want to ask a question kind of, because I only know you from, you know, journalism and Instagram stuff, but you have this North Node on the IC, which is kind of where you come from and your family life and stuff. And that's about soul's purpose kind of work. So I wonder what kind of support you have right now from family, or do you feel like, you know, you had a teacher that really taught you about journalism, or is there something that you look to as kind of that foundation for building something like this as a career?
Wow, that's a really like interesting question that has like sparked a lot of deep thoughts in my mind. So I grew up, I didn't live with my family. I was, I like moved around a lot. I lived with different families, sort of like foster care. I don't speak with my mother at all. And my father passed away when I was a very small child. So like close nuclear family, not so much. But I think that growing up like that, I was exposed very early to injustice. And through that, I became motivated to fix it, to help people. That's always been very important to me. I always knew I wanted to be a journalist. Like I said earlier, I'm like a big history nerd. And I've always loved writing. So pretty early on, I want to say like probably in middle school, I was like, okay, like I think journalism might be the thing for me. And that was confirmed when we took a trip to the set of Good Morning America, and I had a conversation with one of the anchors. She's like, oh wow, like you should really think about being a journalist. And from that point on, that's all I wanted to do.
Whoa,
that's so interesting, so cool. Because it's in Sagittarius too, so this idea of, you know, it not being such a stable or whatever, a very mutable background and kind of moving and all that kind of stuff, and then having inspiration. I feel like Sagittarius, we talk about the ninth house in Sagittarius being the kind of education that you're interested in, the stuff that you go after.
Mm-hmm. I think too, just to like get into the history stuff too, because your Taurus sun, hey Tauruses, but also when we're using Placidus, your eighth house, which is the house of, I think that can be like a very historical house, just kind of like the ninth house, but also
other people's
like
stuff,
other people's stuff, the taboo, the twisted, the like the murky things, and you have your sun, are who we are, who we're always growing into. We're never done learning to become more and more of a Taurus sun, but then also that Aries Mercury, the communication planet of the self. And when we talk about that bravery, and I know like that can be like, oh, someone's brave, but like, this is some like scary shit. You have to like have some like fire in you to like keep going a lot of the times. I think it could be probably easy to quit, and a Taurus and an Aries are not quitter people. Like, they're definitely like, I'm going to fucking finish this out and see this through. And also Aries too, we talk about this a lot, and I think they don't get this rep enough about like truth seeking, because Aries is that first sign. Aries is the baby of the zodiac, and they kind of just, they go, hey, there's the sheriff's department's made of gangs. Anyone else see this but me? Like, it's just like very like, duh, you know, like in a lot of ways, like Aries aren't afraid to point out the duh because they just see the truth. So I love that you have your sun and communication planet sharing this eighth house space of the like, the difficult to discuss. And it's like, well, I can, not that that's your job or duty, or like that has to be, you know, the onus on you, but if anyone's gonna have the onus, it's a good thing that you have like, I think, these planets that can kind of back up how challenging that is. Are you aware of like what's, and this might be like astro, like, but I know you're into Chani, like, are you aware of like the eighth house and like the houses as a whole?
Not as much as y'all, I'm sure, but I know a little bit. I know a little bit. Yes.
Okay. Yes. Don't worry. Just checking in. Just because we all have the eighth house in our chart. Not all of us will have planets in there, and that doesn't mean we don't have, you know, themes of the eighth house. But I think that just sometimes when we do have planets in a particular house, that can just sometimes give insight of I don't know, like more of like a light, like what we might be actually doing here on Earth in this time we're here.
Do you think that you've always known how to ask difficult questions?
Ooh.
Mm. I think I've gotten better at it, but I've never shied away from asking difficult questions.
Yeah. Because I mean, that to me is what that Mercury in Aries in the eighth house would be, is like, maybe you've gotten better at like formatting them, but at least very much being interested in like, what's that about, asking. It's a very investigative kind of place anyways. And I could see that Aries as being like pretty direct, and maybe asking some questions that don't seem taboo to you, but maybe in the responses or in people's reactions. Was that ever your experience growing up, maybe, of asking questions that you felt like you shouldn't, or not that you didn't feel that way, but was that ever your experience with people around you of being like, why are you asking? Like, what do you, I don't know. You know what I mean? Like when adults are surprised by that kind of thing, by that kind of interest.
Growing up, probably not so much. Growing up, I was more of an observer, and I think I still have that quality. But when I was a child, I was definitely very quiet and the kind of kid that would be like in the corner, like watching everything. I'd want to get a read on what everyone was doing, what their motivations were before I would talk. My parents actually, they thought something was wrong with me because I didn't talk until I was three.
Oh wow.
Yeah. But I think, let's see, asking difficult questions, was that it, asking difficult questions?
No, but I mean that's like a, I think that's an interesting kind of inverse. One of the things that I like about astrology and being able to talk with people about their chart is that like, this is what that would indicate to me, but then hearing what someone's actual experience with it is, that it's like, oh, that's an interesting, like, to me that's similar, it's the same but flipped, where it is like, if you're watching, if you are the observer of a thing, so it's, maybe it's not asking but watching people and kind of being quietly able to clock what people are doing, I think that still would give you an understanding of people on a level that that you could understand without asking questions, if that makes sense. I know I feel like I've said a very like vague mushy thing, but also like, I don't know if most kids are observant in that way, or a lot, some of them aren't, and so they aren't able to like clock behaviors or motivation or be thinking in that way that you can only do if you are just watching.
Well, I think that just gives, I mean, now I'm just like, you know, when we hear Aries Mercury, right, I think a lot of the times if you Google that and researching your own charts, you're gonna get those things of like impulsive and loud and says, you know, says it as it is, But then also when it's in this eighth house space, that's a little more, you know, is a little more behind the scenes. And then also, I mean, we're Virgo rising too. So the observing, like the observance and like, you know, taking all the notes and knowing where we're entering before we just impulsively Aries maybe dive in, I think is just, that's like the fun kind of Kinsey-esque conversation we can have about natal charts. Same with Cancer. I'm a Cancer Mars too. And I think we're master manipulators. So I think that can be, I think it's also like, okay, well, I'm going to like see what they need. And then I can kind of, you know, crab my way in or crab my way out and yeah. sidestep. And then I can maybe know when it's time to go full Aries-ness. We do have Aries Venus too. I mean, I'm curious, like, I know I said the word impulse, and I think that's the one that goes with Aries of just like, you know, quick changing or, you know, not tied to like how we felt yesterday. Like, okay, I'm going to keep it moving. Do any of those? Like, yeah, I guess I'm curious if any of that kind of Aries energy clocks for you.
When you said Aries and Venus, I thought about how like when I first started dating my girlfriend, that like really mm-hmm. resonated to me. Like we had a very like fast little romance. And we, okay. Like, so that seems very like Aries to me. Like we told each other that we loved each other like after a week, and then we moved in after like 4 months.
All right. So that's Aries Venus Aries. In that seventh house, baby, the seventh house of partnership. We love to see.
I moved in with my boyfriend really quick too. So I'm with you. And it's worked out for a while. So I think we're on a good path. I'm curious to know if you, because there is this kind of dual yod thing happening. You have Mars and the moon in Cancer, and then you have this Uranus, Neptune in Capricorn, and they're kind of just weirdly positioned where they're not in opposition to each other, but to the other or whatever. And I wonder if you like to surprise people. Like, is that a part of your journalism where you're like, I really want to blow people's minds? Or are you a pranker? Are you like, do you like to like see the look on people's face, or does it like, do you like to ease your way in? I feel like it could go either way.
Definitely not a pranker, but I do like to like shock people with my journalism. Like working on this, I'll like randomly like run. I'm like working in my little office space, and then I'll come across something like really big, like, oh, like the LA County Sheriff's Department gangs facilitated a bribe to Bill Clinton while he was president in order to get the son of a cocaine trafficker off the hook. That's a true story. So okay. I'll find something like that, and then I'll go run in the other room, and I'm like, oh my God, you guys, like, did you know that Lee Baca did this shit? And everyone's like, no, Cerise, like, nobody is living in the LA Sheriff's Department. Like,
I love that. Also, just because maybe we can, you know, go back to early astro days of like, was there anything that got you into astrology, or like where did that kind of bloom from? Did being a Taurus, did that also hit for you, maybe like reading little horoscopes growing? I think a lot of us, you know, start with reading it in magazines or in passing, but yeah, I'm curious, like, was there something that clicked for you with astrology, and it seems to have stayed with you to present day?
Yeah, I've always been really into it. I mean, when I lived with my mom introduced me to it, actually. She was really big into astrology, and she would get readings pretty regularly. So
oh, wow.
When I lived with her in her house, she would always tell my brother's a Virgo, like, oh, you're Virgo, like, tell him about, like, maybe why he's doing something or why he approaches the situation in a certain way. The same thing with me. I'm a Taurus. As a child, I was very stubborn. I think I still am. But that would come out a lot when I was a kid, and she would always just be like, oh, my little Taurus, like, you know, it has to be your way.
What's her sign?
My mother is an Aquarius.
Ah. Ooh, you have a nose ring too. I feel like a lot of Tauruses look good with a nose ring.
It's
like the bull, right? Like, I feel like we all look good with it. I have a fake one that I like take in and out because I'm, you know, a scaredy cat.
But also, I love this Aquarius mom too, of like my stubborn little Taurus is like, Aquarians are just as stubborn, right back. So that's the myth. If I do any myth busting on this podcast, it is that, you know, Taurus is always, that's like the classic, I think, adjective descriptor is like stubborn, I think it's like an easy one that people will definitely clam on to, like, yeah, you're stubborn, you need it, where it's like, oh, I just like what I like, and I'm sure. Okay.
Yeah. Aquariuses were literally like the world to not change their mind.
Right. They're more stubborn.
They will go, the lengths that an Aquarius will go to not change are truly astounding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that lines up with my mom.
Well, I love like, did she have like readers come to the house, or was this, she like, okay. Wow.
Oh yeah. We had readers in the house. Looking back, it was like a very like hippy dippy house that she kept.
That's so cool.
I mean, LA native, right? Yeah. Like it is a safe space for astro heads. I will say.
Well, I guess I have two questions. After my first question is, does doing this work, however, you know, horrifying and troubling and all of those things, does this make you like feel hopeful at all? Like, no. Thank you. Well, then I guess the follow up, or I mean, sort of follow up, but this is then a two-parter of like, what do you hope that readers take away from this, besides the information, obviously, on its own? Like, what is it? What is our, you know, not goal, but you know what I'm saying? Like, what do you hope people take away from this piece?
I hope that it helps people, truly. I just hope that, you know, maybe it's getting another innocent man like Frankie Carrillo out of jail. Maybe it's saving somebody's life, truly. Mm-hmm. One story that has really stuck with me while doing this is I talk to a lot of attorneys. Who have worked on these cases. And one of the attorneys I spoke with is actually still in the process of litigation for the shooting death of a young man who had a mental illness. He was killed by two deputies in a sheriff's gang. In my reporting, I found out that one of the men who killed him had been involved with a few other incidents where a mentally ill person was killed. And the attorney had no idea. The county did not disclose that information to him, which is a crime. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, that happens all the time. It happens more often than not, from what I've seen. But because I am doing this work and I called him on that day, I just happened to call him the day before he was going to court about this case, and I told him this information, he was able to go to the judge and present and say, hey, the county is doing crimes. They're doing Brady violations. And I hope that that will have a positive impact on the case. I think it already did. I mean, it shows the judge, like, the county's lawyers are playing fast and loose with facts here. Mm-hmm. So I'm still in contact with that attorney. I'm still monitoring that case. And I really hope that that family can get, you know, I mean, you'll never get justice for losing your son, right? But mm-hmm. I hope that they're able to get more what they deserve because of the work that I'm doing. That's really mm-hmm. what motivates me through any story I do, really. It's just to help people and hopefully make the world a better place.
I was going to say, kind of follow up is like, what I think a lot of people, and this is something that we've talked about ourselves and all of this, is that especially if it's not something that makes you feel particularly hopeful, like what should we be doing? Or like, what, you know, not obviously it's not your job to tell everybody, you know, what everyone individually should be doing. But I think for people that are going to read this and feel overwhelmingly upset,
ready to go.
Yeah, ready to go. What should people do, or what, you know, what if people aren't
what's effective?
Some actions we could take. It doesn't have to be the answer.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, thank you. That's what I was trying to say. It's like, does it have to be the overwhelming end all be all of answer? But what do you think is something that people maybe don't realize that they could be doing that they could absolutely be doing?
Yeah, I think that probably the biggest thing that gets in the way of people finding out about these bad actor officers is something called the Peace Officers Bill of Rights, which is something that's, I believe, present in 46 states. It's a special rights that are given to cops. Basically, the big takeaways from that are that when a cop commits a crime, they have the right to speak with a union representative before they speak with an investigator. They have the right to review any evidence about the incident before they speak with an investigator. That isn't something that everyday people get, no. Right? And I think that in a lot of these cases, that window of time where they can sit with each other and sit with the union rep and look at the tape, that's where a lot of these stories are concocted to say, oh, you know, mm-hmm. if you say this, say that you're in fear for your life, that in fear for your life bullshit. I don't think that should exist. I think that the Peace Officers Bill of Rights that allows them to do that, I think that needs to be at the bare minimum reexamined. That is something that, you know, if voters were so inclined, I believe that we could get rid of it through a proposition if we voted on it. I think that's something we could get rid of. I think that would make a big difference. I think that, you know, we're building a database to, you know, keep track of all these bad acts, but I think that's something that the government should be doing, really. They have all the access. I've tried right. very hard to get, you know, as much as I can about these people, but at the end of the day, I don't have their personnel files. Mm-hmm. I think that that stuff should be public. I think that the public mm-hmm. has a right to know that if there's a killer on your streets wearing a badge, enforcing the law, I think that residents have a right to know about that. And I don't think that police officers who kill someone should be able to go back on the street. That's
fair.
We live in a country that, you know, is supposed to guarantee your right to a speedy and fair trial. And yeah, even like people always say, like, oh, you need someone to protect you from the bad guys. From the bad
right.
guys. The bad guys have rights too. I mean, like, we live in a free country, and that is people have rights, and I'm very proud of that fact that, you know, people in the United States supposedly have these rights. I'd like to see that actually play out more.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, it just makes me think of, like, I think that you're right and why it's so important, the work that you're doing of just bringing this information to light and letting people know that information exists. It's just hidden and not available to people, because I think when people are making that argument that we're talking about at the beginning of, like, oh, well, this is a good, there's good cops, there's this, that people just aren't aware of all of the mounting evidence against, like, police do, so they're not looking into it. I'm thinking, you know, I've been thinking so much lately about how, like, conspiratorial our society is right now, and how, you know, QAnon is huge and all of this kind of thing, but it's like the real problems are very obvious, or like it's not like big you know, like Pizzagate stuff. It's that the people that are charged with protecting us are not infallible. And I think that's, like, a harder thing for people to grasp than some other big, like, deep state sort of thing. But just this idea of, like, oh no, there's, like, just knowing that, like, records are destroyed, or this Bill of Rights where it's like, oh yeah, that's sketchy. And I think even someone who might kind of bristle at this, you know, blanket statement of defund the police would be able to understand that, oh, that seems fishy, and that doesn't seem like that's right. And I think the more people can know that we're not talking about, you know, I think people just are so defensive where they're like, oh well, these people are protecting us and they're doing such a good job, and it's like, well, that's just not true. Or whatever. Like, there's just these things that people aren't thinking of that are so just systemic that I think
Yeah.
I don't know. I, for me, and like, I, maybe I'm wrong and maybe I don't have all the facts or whatever, but when people are like, who's, who are you going to come to? Who, it's like, I'm like, when have they ever solved some shit? Like, yeah, not, and exactly. Like, and not what I'm being facetious because I'm a comedian, but like in my experience, that is not actually how stuff gets handled.
Mm-hmm. There's so, a reason to true crime is a huge genre. And
like, what do they solve?
Lots of unsolved cases.
Like, well, that- it's like, I can't even, they solve speeders. Like, I, whatever. I, that is not what people are talking about. And I'm also curious what you think on this new street sweeping thing.
Oh, I was hoping you're gonna bring up street sweeping
just to confuse people. Mm-hmm. And like, I know because I visit other cities in California or whatever that do have the other bi-weekly or whatever, but it says it on the signs and I haven't seen a single sign get replaced where it says second Tuesday or fourth Tuesday of the month or whatever. If there's nothing, and I'm just like, okay, I'm just still, we're all still just battling it out for parking in my neighborhood, but good luck with the new supposed we're not going to get tickets every other week. Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm.
Thoughts?
Well, it's also like the I think Scott had this tweet, but it, but even that idea of like, if something is stolen or something like that, like, there's never been a time when you've called the police and they've been like, yes, we're on it, we can absolutely do something about
or
that.
Or they're like, we that, have it. We have it here at the station. Oh, yeah. Someone turned it in.
Yeah, then it's like, what? From what? But it is this same idea, I think, of just like, oh, yeah, we have to believe that there are like bad people and good people in order. Like, if we get rid of that, then you have to do all kinds of like the whole house of cards goes down. Sorry, use a house of cards metaphor. Terrible. but that thing of like, oh, well, then that, I guess going back to that like innocence idea, where then it's like, oh, well, then I'm not just a good person, I'm also a bad person or a whatever. And that's a lot.
I do have a feeling on the street sweeping, just they should be vacuums that suck up the garbage versus things that spray garbage and push them around.
Just get rid of fucking street sweeping.
Yeah, like, I'm against it. I'm also anti-leaf blower, and I will get this to stop. I'm over it. If who likes it? Who's like, yeah, I need the dirt moved around. Can you come leaf blow
I
my
need
place?
The dirt. I need the dirt.
Those unionized workers love it.
But my place is 8 units. Like, get a rake. It's really not that big of a deal. Get a broom. It's probably faster.
Well, I think this is interesting to think of, like, because you're entering, you just entered your Saturn return with Saturn and Aquarius.
How you feeling? And,
how's that feeling? Any notices? Any big changes? You have it in your sixth house, which we can talk about. But that is like,
yeah, tell me about that.
Okay, so Saturn. Well, pin in this for a second. I think the Saturn and Aquarius time is really like all this old systems of like, why do we have a thing that pushes the garbage around? Why do we have clearly gangs in the LA Sheriff's Department? Why is there no $15 minimum wage? Where are these stimuluses? What is, like, it's just so old, and Aquarius hates the old. It wants something new, and it will take elements of the old that work, but it will only if it works. If it doesn't work, then what's the fucking point? And you have it in your sixth house place that it can be literal work, but also routines, our health, how we're taking care of ourselves, basically how we are maintaining ourselves to go out into the world. So you're having the Saturn return in that space in Aquarius. You are a late degree Saturn. You're at 28 degrees. So probably closer to 2022, 23 is when you might feel more of the direct.
When it's
the exact degree of Saturn, but we're in it. You've officially entered. So yeah. Any vibes or feels on that Saturn return happening for you?
It's been rough. I mean, like, my Saturn return has been like during the pandemic. So that's, that like comes with a whole wave of like learning how to take care of yourself, like we talked about earlier, and getting in tune with best practices. I've learned a lot that I'm like very into yoga during my Saturn return.
Yes.
I found that as a very restorative, grounding practice.
What do you use for yoga, or do you have like a app or person or thing that you like to use?
Are you freewheeling? Sometimes I freewheel if I'm like struck by nature. I'll strike a pose. Yes.
That's some earth side shit right there. You know.
Oh yeah.
When you're casually struck by nature, you know, taking in the glory of the outdoors.
Well, what's striking for me, and I don't know if this has been, I'm sure there's some level of this for everyone in their Saturn return, but it's just been really obvious for Saturn and Aquarius folks, is that I think there's something about Saturn that's kind of, I mean, obviously it's very personal, like for everyone in their Saturn return, you have like personal things that you're dealing with, but I think Saturn and Aquarius people are really kind of having to reckon with like society's irresponsibility in a way that other Saturn people have not had to deal with in the past, where it's kind of, they've had the luxury of having it be a little bit more personal. And I think because the nature of Aquarius is a little more, you know,
community minded,
but also it's, you know, it's the water bearer, it's holding the vase. And so there is this level of kind of, I don't want to say detachment, because it's not, I've seen some people be posting about, you know, Aquarius is getting this rap for being unemotional, and that's not true. But I think that there is just this thing of like being able to examine a little bit from a distance that lets you see the community, that lets you see the collective and all of that. And so I think having your Saturn return in Aquarius is kind of like, it's not just you, Cerise, it's everybody. And where do I, like, I, you know, Saturn asks us to kind of grow up. And I think that it's this Saturn return for a lot of people is like, it's not things necessarily that you didn't deal with. It's that like we haven't dealt with. And now you are kind of having to take your place in that place. Does that make sense to you at all?
That resonates like so much. I'm like shook. A couple of weeks ago, I like, do you listen to LA podcast? Can we talk about other podcasts?
Yeah.
I went on LA pod and I like talked a lot about my experiences at my past employer, and that just sort of like, it turned into a whole thing. People on Twitter are talking about it.
Oh yeah.
Y'all know. I was in the paper. That seems very much like, I don't know, like the sheriff's thing. All of it just seems like, I'm like standing, like looking at all this bullshit, and I'm just like screaming at the powers that be, like, what the fuck? Like, fix it.
Mm-hmm. So also fun working theory too, just talking about the current transits with your chart. So two things, Uranus, the planet of change and chaos, just passed over your sun. Uranus is going to be in Taurus till 2025. So all of us Taurus folks, and also fixed sign people who are getting those aspects from Uranus, are anything that needed to change that was overdue, and Taurus doesn't change very often. Taurus is like now just putting on that leather jacket and going, fuck it. Like I'm changing this, I'm changing that. I held these principles for so long, or I've kept this motion, and Taurus is finally given this permission to like change their mind for a sign that doesn't change their mind very often. So I think that that's been really revolutionary for a lot of fixed sign people and Taurus people. And then we've had the nodes, which is where the eclipses take place. That's right on your midheaven, the highest point of your career, which is in Gemini, which is, I mean, love it. It's so social. It's people. It's the communicator. It's writing.
Communicating.
Mm-hmm. And then so you have these eclipses happening on your IC, which we talked about earlier with Sagittarius, with that kind of home space, and also reinventing home too. Sagittarius is not going to always be traditional, right? Like it wants to just do what feels philosophically connected and what they agree with. And so you have these eclipses taking place in your most private space and your most public space. So I think, the nodes are going to change, I think, towards the end of the year or early next year. But this whole year, all these eclipses are taking place in your home and in your private life, and also in your very public life. So I don't know if I have like, I was going to say, so good luck. I guess, like, good luck with that. But I think it's just like, if it feels like it's all happening, it is all happening right now. You have a lot of transits that are going on top of a Saturn return as well. So Cool. Sometimes that's all you can do with astrology is like, well, that's happening. So that's happening. And just like, how can we then Cancer moon, you know, soothe ourselves? You do have your moon in the 11th house place of friends, of community, of, you know, people that make you feel good. So I think that's like a nice place to return to of just like people that get you and people that make you feel like you can just, you know, say what you want to say without it, you know, being tit for tat. Like, can I, not that we have to trauma bond with our friends or like emotionally dump on them, but we should have friends that can hold that space and not just expect us to be one thing or another. And I think Cancer moon's going to really appreciate the friends and community that can let them let the water out, especially since you have so much going on with these, you know, this air stuff that's very much about being seen in your work.
Yeah.
Mic drop. It's a foot, baby. And I wanted to touch too, just quick. You have this your Jupiter, the planet of abundance in Libra, this sign of justice too. So, you know, not to get too cheesy, but I think wanting justice on a larger scale is very, you know, on the nose for what we're seeing in your chart too.
Well, and it's in your first house too, of like, you know,
of self
physically showing up, doing, being the person that's going out and doing the investigating and writing the thing and all of that, of having like being really a change agent in that way of, and being kind of, I think Jupiter in the first can be very much like bigger. You are bigger than just you. Obviously you are just you, and that's, and caring for yourself. Like, how do we balance those things? And I think that that's very much in alignment with like some of the Saturn return lessons, is that kind of like we were talking about at the beginning, where it's like, if you don't, if in order for you to be bigger than yourself, you also have to make sure you are caring for your small, like small s self, your body, your emotions, because you can be bigger than you. And that requires us to be even more in tuned with our routines and those things like that, because we have so much, you know, not to put pressure on you. I'm sure you feel that. But that idea of like, I think sometimes the instinct is to go like, oh, well, I'm not important. I need to focus out on all of these other people, or all of these, this work that I'm doing, that's the most important. But it's just to remember that we are an essential part of that equation. So as long as we're remembering to care for ourselves, that's how we continue to be it bigger than ourselves. It's not by rejecting our physical, mental, general wellness, you know, just as a,
I think too, one of the things for Saturn return that I always forget to tell people, which is my bad, but, it's like, you know, that's not the only thing crossing Saturn there that year or those years. Like, you're going to have the sun or Venus or one of the really like lovely, beautiful things come through too. And those things are going to teach you lessons or give you outlooks that are a little bit shinier, where, you know, maybe you meet someone, or maybe you really like have a renewal of your love for your pet or your partner or whatever, and that might help you get through some of the other Saturn stuff. It's not like, oh yeah, this year it's all just Saturn, it's gonna fuck you up.
Well, yeah, you're also getting Jupiter there too. This year specifically, you know, we had the great conjunction in December of last year, but Jupiter is transiting all through that. It'll go into Pisces. Then you're going to get in your seventh house too, which is going to be lovely. I mean, you're already partnered up, but that just is like, so I think it, for doing the seventh house is also that like Libra justice kind of work too, of like really being able to grow and expand your reach in that capacity too, I think bodes very well for the work that you're doing. But also I think like something that Saturn return, this has come up for me a lot lately, is I think sometimes it's also an opportunity to realize like what you do know and how prepared you are for challenges and things like that. Everybody assumes that they're going to be in the Saturn return and not know what to do. And also you might know exactly what to do, and this is just when you're kind of presented with the opportunity to use the skills that you have accumulated up to this point in your life. And it's like those things, I think too, nobody thinks of Saturn as like, oh, actually this is when I was like, oh, I got this opportunity and I was fully prepared and I was ready to step into this thing, and I wouldn't have been you know, 4 years ago, 2 years ago, 1 year ago, in the same position to like step into this authority that I am now? And isn't that cool? So I think like just remembering that there might be some surprises and positive, I guess, not like positives, but just like, oh yeah, like this, I'm ready for this. I actually do know what to do in this situation.
Mm-hmm. I felt a few years before Saturn return, like the most like felt like impending doom. Like I knew like there was a lot of stuff that I was going to have to do soon. And then I know everyone's Saturn return is going to hit in a different way, but yeah, I think it can be surprising how we were preparing for this moment in many ways. Like this was just the culmination. And right now Saturn is currently, it's still in your fifth house, and that's the place of pleasure and fun. So I think that can be like a fun reminder too of like, with astrology, not that we have to like only do the things of where the planets are, but it's like, oh shit, have I been making time, Saturn, for things that make me laugh and things that just are like, you know, getting laid and like doing all the things that like feel good, and making sure like that's just as part of our health as like doing the work. So you're going to do the works here, honey. the work is present.
You're doing the work. It's just making time for the other stuff too, because it informs and aids the work.
Mm-hmm. Did you have any questions about your chart or any of the placements or anything before we maybe get into our game in a little bit?
Ooh. I mean, yeah, I don't know what to ask. Like, I want to ask things, but I don't know what.
Oh no, you're, and what's it can most... also. Oh yeah, go for
go
it.
Go ahead. No, you go.
I was gonna say it could also not maybe like be like, if the sun's here, it could be like, I'm curious about, I don't know,
yeah,
sibling relationships. It could be broad, and we can then, you know,
ooh,
pinpoint.
Yeah, do that one. Sibling relationships.
Oh, shit. Well, okay, there you go. Well, I mean, you mentioned
well,
a Virgo.
Are they broad?
I don't know, you what? Do have this blue. Hmm?
Sorry, you cut out a little.
I said, no. I said, are they fraught, or do you have good sibling relationships?
They are. They're very fraught.
We have Pluto
there. Yeah, I was gonna say that third house space is where journal, like the houses represent different things, and sometimes they can be very catch all. Like when we mentioned sixth house being health and routine, it's also small pets and like you know other things. Like same with the fifth house, that can be love and passion and romance, which also is the spot of children. The ninth house philosophy can also be grandparents. So like they can kind of encompass a lot of different themes. So your third house space is where we can look for communication, writing, journalism, but it's also the house of siblings, and you have Pluto there, and Pluto can definitely, you know, it has opinions. Like Pluto is like, Pluto's not going to play nice for the sake of playing nice. Pluto's going to play real because it was the last planet that was kicked out of being a planet by NASA, and it doesn't have anything to lose. So I think Pluto can be like a big guardian and maybe stop us from like pursuing people because it wants to protect us, or it can say fuck everybody and just like blow up the spot. So I think it can be like very one way or another. I don't see it as like a very like, oh, we're just, I don't know, we're siblings and we don't talk much and like that's it. Like I feel like it's like explosive, or like they're blocked, you know, like, or like they're just like fully, or they're fully gone. I mean, you do have aspects that are harmonious to Pluto, so that might be also extra juice to like stand up for your needs with Venus and the things that you want to do with Mars. But yeah, I mean, it's there in it's Scorpio, so I mean, that's, Scorpios always just know all the dirt on each other too, so I think that that can also be interesting with siblings, right? Where you're like, I know you better than you think I do, or like the vice versa.
I think too with Pluto, we often forget, or like with sibling, with third house and with stuff that involves other people, we often forget like this is our perspective on the other person.
Right.
So it's very possible that they feel very close to you, and you're like, you kind of pick me off. Or whatever, or like you go through those phases, right? Because Pluto is all death and rebirth. So it's like, sometimes like we just click, like I know one Thanksgiving, like we just did this and that was like so fun. And like, no one got in a fight or whatever. But most of the time they're kind of like this, and maybe they always see you as that Thanksgiving. So it's important to remember, like, you're allowed to completely create a boundary. You're allowed to let people in. It's totally, this is your natal chart, and it's totally up to you what that kind of Pluto stuff is. If you want to, you have the ability to rekindle that relationship at any time. if you want to, you have the ability to destroy that relationship at any time. It is very useful in journalism because you're constantly, you know, digging through information and you're repeating that process every time you start a new story. And that can be really hard for people to let go of work or, you know, have something be complete. Like, I have a really tough time with ending stuff when I write. So that might be a real asset for you in other places of life, but applying it in personal relationships can be very different. So definitely something you might think about for, you know, the rest of your life. This is your natal chart for life. But that does, you know, that could be in a good way or a bad way.
Do you feel like you have power? To me, that's also like this idea of domination in Pluto in the third house of like, is it a, do you feel like it not necessarily literally dominant, but just that it also is like informative and transformative, your sibling relationships? Like, have they informed you now as a person, like that sort of thing? Has it been a source of transformation for you? That could be positive, negative. That doesn't have to be that, but I think just like that it's a powerful response. Like,
yeah, I think that the relationship with my brother has like forced me to like not necessarily grow up, but like take on different things that I probably wouldn't have, just because like I truly didn't have the desire to, but because our relationship is very fraught, we don't speak to each other right now. And we kind of go back and forth like that Pluto. Sometimes we're really close. Sometimes we're just like, I don't want anything to do with you. And we're in one of those patterns right now where we're just like not speaking. So yeah, a lot of that, like, really
I think like the thing is with Pluto is it's typically, and again, I think what Lisa brought up, this is your chart. So maybe he feels differently, or maybe an outsider would be like, oh, I wouldn't see that, but this is what you're experiencing. But Pluto's heavy, you know, Pluto's not going to like think about our relationship, wherever it is, in a very like, just like breezy sort of way. It's very like, no, you were my life witness and now you're doing this. And like, I have a very fraught relationship with my brother as well. So, and I have theories on that in my chart, but I think that it's interesting because it is that space of writing and siblings. And it's interesting that astrology can kind of share those spaces. But sometimes Pluto's that fuel sometimes too, of like rage of like, fuck all these people.
Well, also in the third house too, where it can be kind of, it's a very mutable, changeable house where it is kind of like, I think it also can be proximity too, if you aren't like physically close to that person anymore. Like if you aren't sharing a home, or if you aren't living in the same neighborhood, then that also I think can have a pretty dramatic effect on the relationship as well, just because it is that like intensity kind of magnet thing. When you're in each other's orbit, then you can like connect on a really deep thing. But if you aren't there, then it's like, I don't even know who the fuck you are, that kind of thing. Like, do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, totally. Yeah, my brother lives in Colorado. Yeah, so there you go.
Well, where, and I'm seeing like, this. And I'm seeing this square, so it's like making a air quotes harsh aspect to your Saturn too. So that might be like, that feels very like life lesson sort of things. Like, I don't know if it's going to have like a bow on it, right? Like you mentioned the kind of oscillating back and forth, but maybe this Saturn time, since you're going to get that influence from Aquarius coming up on your Saturn, is to like, I don't know. I think Lisa actually gave me this advice. We talked about like fraught family of like, maybe we just email, you know, phone calls seem to set us off, or maybe we just like, I think it's finding Saturnian solutions so it doesn't become Pluto explosion. If that's what you mm-hmm. want, right? Like if that's how you want to go, I think it's finding Aquarius Saturn's new solutions to old problems. And I think it's just, and it's a know thyself, right? Like I know that for sure with my family. It's like, if we get on FaceTime, it's a fucking nightmare. If we text, it's somehow chill, whatever. It's not ideal, but like, that's that's how we function, or that's how the best functions for me. So then I don't invest all my Cancer Mars, which you have as well, like into my family, because mm-hmm. that is also, Cancer is very family, and you have Mars there, that warrior. So I think too, sometimes Cancer Mars folks, I've just, from other people I've talked to, can be that person that fights to make the unit work. And then you see no one else really doing that work. And then you're like, fuck you all. Like, cause I've done my part. Like, y'all are, I can't.
Well, we all know which family members are fun to party with and which ones aren't. And it's the same thing with text or video chat or phone calls or any other thing. Some family members after the movie is going to say really critical and negative things about the acting and the directing and blah, blah, blah. And some are going to say, I really enjoyed that. And different people want a different reaction, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's finding who you watch the movie with and finding who you, you know, go to the bar with or whatever.
Hell and yeah. Who you ignore for life. No, I'm just
kidding. Well, speaking of fraught relationships, let's play this game.
Let's do it.
Yes. Therese, we're playing a game. Maybe you've heard of it. It's called Marry, Fuck, Kill. Any yes. relation to this game? Awareness. Perfect. We're going to play with celebrities that share your big three combination. I couldn't Ooh. Find a perfect match for your Taurus, Sun, Cancer, Moon, Virgo, Rising, only because we don't always have rising times on celebrities because we don't always ever have their birth, but we will play two rounds, one with Taurus, Sun, Cancer, Moon, and then one with Taurus, Sun, Virgo, Rising. Let's start with a very interesting group. It's always an interesting mix of people with Taurus, Sun, Cancer, Moon. Let's go with Carmen Electra, Ooh. Robert Pattinson, and Penelope Cruz.
Oh, this is hard. I'm killing Robert.
This sucks.
This
because I always want to kill the one man, and he's my big three match, so I feel like I can't kill him.
Mm-hmm.
But it's okay. It's you rough. Should kill. You should kill him.
I'm killing him.
Okay. All right. Fair.
I would probably fuck Carmen Electra and marry Penelope.
Ooh, any yeah. reasons of like why marriage for Penel and why fuck? Like, is there how are we rationalizing this?
I watched The Last Dance, and Carmen Electra has a few appearances because she was yeah. dating Dennis Rodman yep. at the time, yes. and it just seemed like they had a great fucking time. Like, I'm just picturing myself in Dennis's shoes, and she's taking me around Vegas, and we're mm-hmm. gambling and being sexy and just drinking, and yeah, that sounds great.
that does sound great.
Marriage for yeah. Penelope. God, what movie did I see her in where she was? God, what movie am I thinking of? What movie was she in where she was at home?
At home.
Vicky Cristina Barcelona.
That would be a chaotic home.
The one yeah. time I went to Spain, I wasn't in Madrid, but I heard that her and Javier Bardem are like walking around Madrid all the time looking real hot, and that there's like power couple energy. So I think we're on to like just hot wife. The hot wife zone is yeah. is prevalent.
I think I'm doing the same thing. I'm sorry, I do like Robert Pattinson, but I never got into Twilight. I just don't think I could either fuck nor marry him based on that meme that was going around last summer where he's like in the sweatsuit in the kitchen.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Like I just great can't, meme. I mm-hmm. can't get it out of my head, and I feel like it's gonna be an impediment to our connection. So I am gonna kill him.
Okay.
I'm gonna fuck Carmen Electra. That's like childhood hottie kind mm-hmm. of energy too. So like, you know, I think she also could be. I remember that. I don't
Fruitopia.
Know. Did they have a show, her and Dave Navarro? Did they was there a brief reality show, or was it just like an episode of Cribs that I'm thinking of?
I don't know. Cribs. I could see them.
I know for sure Cribs, but I thought there was a Cribs. But I thought there was like a brief reality Maybe. Show or something like that too.
Probably. She was on Singled Out, which was, you know.
Yeah. She also seems like she would be a chill, cool wife, but I think she just
a chill,
is like,
cool wife.
I would fuck her, I think. And Penelope, I don't know, that just seems fun. Mary.
Okay.
Like,
all right. I have decided I'm also going to kill Robert Pattinson. Damn. I just,
wow.
There can only be one Taurus sun, Cancer moon, Taurus sun.
Yeah.
I mean, Taurus rising. So sorry, Batman. And if you ever need help with any of your work, I will unkill you in this game and do any sort of kind of like Hollywood shit that you need, like a writer or just, you know, if you do need help, I will, because I do feel like you're the most relevant of the three. So just want to put that out there. I will take this back, but you are getting killed. And then
the way the cookie crumbles in this game, someone's got to go.
Yeah, and I think he would do it. I think he would. He just,
he'd be,
I know as a fellow Taurus, Cancer Taurus, like, if it was two women like that, sure, I would sacrifice myself too. And then
very clear in this game. And this is, I think this is a tough.
I think I want to marry Carmen Electra. I just feel like it hits all the childhood fantasy vibes, where Penelope Cruz, I feel like I didn't get into until later in life. And so, yeah, sure. I'll have a fling.
Okay.
I feel that.
They did have a reality show, Till Death Do Us Part, yes. Her and Dave Navarro, classic Ink Master. I'm also going to kill Robert Pattinson. He's hot, but it's just order of operations right now. I think I'm going to go the fuck Carmen. I did recently hear her interviewed on Glowing Up podcast, and I was like, I don't know if I want to be married to you, but I will, I will have sex with you. And I mean, so hot and good burger, just like everything. And The Last Dance. Classic and fashion icon. And Penelope, you know, she seems great. I think she probably has a nice house. We'll make it work. Taurus on Cancer Moons, it was a great group. And also, Lisa, I did find another big three twin for you, which is Steve Winwood.
Lizzo, right? Oh.
Oh, Winwood, Lizzo too?
I think so. She might just
be I thought she had a Virgo moon. Maybe she's Virgo rising. I don't know. Some of these celebrities have been
similar chart. It might be a lot of
celebs have been fast and loose with their birth charts too. I know Megan Thee Stallion has been causing up a storm because she keeps saying she's like a Leo moon. Everyone's like, that's your Mars. And now we're all confused. So like, hey, celebs, please update your astrotheme.com profiles so we can get the best reporting while we're on our journalism kick, the best reporting we can do.
Yeah. This is our investigative story
of like, what's the birth time. Some other Taurus sun Cancer moons we've talked about before on the podcast, Pierce Brosnan. I almost want to include him in this round because it was going to be called the hottie round. Betty Page, Jason Biggs, Steve Winwood, William Shakespeare, Mac DeMarco, Ghostface Killah, Amy Heckerling, and also Willie Nelson, Pete Seeger, and also two other folks we've talked about on the podcast before, Jemima Kirk and Lena Dunham from Girls. You know, we've talked about Lena Dunham on this podcast before in very interesting ways. Next up, Taurus sun, Virgo rising. All right, okay, let's just go for it. Uma Thurman, Roy Orbison, and Mark Zuckerberg.
Oh my god. Oh god. This is a hottie round to find out who to kill.
the crowd goes wild.
Easiest round of my life. I'm fucking killing Mark Zuckerberg. I'm fucking Uma Thurman. And I'm marrying Roy Orbison. I've never had an easier round.
Tough one for me.
I don't even know who that is. I'm like Googling him.
Who, Roy Orbison?
Yeah.
he's old.
He sings Pretty Woman.
Yeah, he's an old crooner. Old crooner. Don't know that song. we Google people once in a while. It's sometimes you also just gotta go off face value. If you're like, I don't know you, Google image. Got it. Okay. We'll go from there.
I think I wanna kill Mark Zuckerberg, but like I'm not sure I don't want to kill Roy Orbison too. It's very strange. I do think you have to kill Mark because like the conversation we just had, it would be inappropriate for me to do anything other than kill him.
Would you also, that's where I'm like,
Can you kill Facebook with this?
What you're saying, but also it's like, do you want to marry or fuck Zuckerberg either? Nah.
Yeah.
Oh well, the Mary one. I might do. That's very wealthy. Fuck, absolutely not. That is a sexless marriage if it happens. But I think that for sure I'm killing him just because. Ugh. And then yeah. I will. I guess I will have sex with Roy Orbison and marry Uma Thurman, and that will not be a sexless marriage.
Okay.
All right. I'm marrying Roy because I don't know who he is, and he died in 88, so I guess I'm still single.
And with all that residual, with all that really good Orbison
residual money,
residual money, you'll be good.
If you own the, if you own the catalog, that's a good life.
Yeah. Who are the others? Uma Thurman and Mark Zuckerberg. Yeah, I'm gonna fuck Uma Thurman and marry Mark because California is a common law, or not common law state, but when you get married in California, what's yours is mine now. So Facebook is now mine, and I'm gonna destroy it. So
all right,
good idea.
Okay. Inside job.
This is revolutionary, mind blowing, and I love that. I love what you just put out there. So wait, who died in that scenario? Roy?
Oh shit, I married two people.
That's what I was saying. That's what I was like.
Yeah.
Well, no.
Roy is dead. So Roy is dead. I killed him. He was already dead. And I married Mark. And I
You could have done like a marriage widow and a Nicole Smith situation too. There's sure, no there rules. There's truly no rules in this universe. But I was just thinking, like, wait, which rich white man's money are we going after on this on this round? I mean, obviously marrying Uma Thurman. She's such a babe, like so hot, seems really nice, so tall. Okay, well, now the Zuckerberg, that is a fortune probably worth more than the Orbison fortune, I would think. And yeah, I would also like to no, I'm just go with the heart. I'm gonna marry Roy Orbison. I'm gonna kill Mark Zuckerberg. I'll be fine on that Orbison money, but I'm excited to watch Cerise take down the Facebook empire from afar.
Yes.
Some other Taurus on Virgo risings we had in the mix: Pete Townsend, Audrina Partridge, David Byrne, and Shirley MacLaine, and Renee Zellweger. Right. I don't know if I said that one, but yeah, that's the game. We did all right answers.
Yes.
Yet again.
There's nothing, right, nothing yet but wrong right answers. Cerise, thank you so much for coming on. Obviously, where can people read this piece? First and foremost.
You can read this piece at knock.la. I would also love it if y'all could donate to our Patreon. It's very expensive to access these court cases. While they are public records, you have to pay for them, which is stupid. That shouldn't be a thing. So please donate to the Patreon so I can keep digging into the cops' dirty business.
Yes.
You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram. I'm Cerise Castle. And that's me.
Yes. And we will have all of this in show notes. But going back to our thing of what can you do? Also, if you aren't doing this kind of work, you can support this kind of work. Donate to the Patreon. Make it possible for people who do have this journalistic disposition to expose the things that need to be exposing and share them with the world. I think that do not underestimate the power of donating, of giving money to these things, because we need it desperately. Thank you so much. This was awesome.
Yeah, it was great to meet you.
Yes.
it was great to meet you all too.
Yes. So you guys listen, follow Cerise, read on the Knock, donate,
share that article.
Tell your friends and family, and we'll see you guys next week. Bye.
Thank you for listening to What's Your Sign. Please rate us 5 stars and subscribe on iTunes or whatever podcast platform you use.
If you like what you heard, please support us on Patreon.
You can also find us online on Instagram at What's Your Sign Podcast or on Twitter at @YRSign_pod.
You can also like our fan page on Facebook and join our friendship group.
Questions, comments, concerns, or to book a commission chart reading, you can email us at whatsyoursignpodcast@gmail.com.
Thank you so much for listening.
Bye.
What's your sign? What's your sign? What's your sign?
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today we discuss technical diagramming with systems architect Maya. Let's go. First question. You've spent 10 hours slogging over a sequence diagram that should have taken 5. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. And if I'm being honest, Miro would probably cut that time down by half. You know, with its AI tools and ready-to-go templates.
Next, your diagrams become so bulky, it's more complex than the solar system. But all it takes is a few clicks and...
It's Miro. I've used those technical shape packs way too many times, and stuff is just digestible on its infinite online canvas.
Now, the final question. Everyone's brought in, but you have to make all these tasks all the way over in Jira. But wait, it's done. Is it...
Miro, easy with its two-way Jira sync. Easy to plot dependencies. Everyone always knows what's up.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people creating technical diagrams without workflow glitches. Get your first 3 boards for free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.